And then we went by train from Bombay to Karachi. They swung us way around through New Delhi and down on train a week, and troop train. British trained coaches, you know, like British style. But they were pretty comfortable for a troop train. It wasn't air conditioned or anything. Anyway, we were put in this cantonment area there just outside of Karachi where General Montgomery trained his 8th Army in a desert training center. And boy, it was they had nice barracks and all, but living conditions were real, you know, bad. Dirt and sand. We weren't there but a couple of weeks, and then they split our outfit up. They decided they didn't need the 89th Aerodrome Squadron as a unit, but they needed various technicians all over India in the Air Transport Command. So some of our radio operators went to Dum Dum at Calcutta. Some of them went to Agra. Some of them went to Lalhat, where I was. Some of them went to Chadwa. Just all over, you know, just divided us up because they needed radio operators real bad. And here we had no flight training to speak of except that detached service that I had at Camp Campbell, Kentucky on a B-25. And so we were flight radio operators as of the time we arrived. And but thank goodness my time was not near as bad as some of the guys over in China, because all we had to do was fly empty from our base at Lao Hat, where about 350 miles north of Calcutta, where the Brahmaputra River makes a big turn and goes up the Assam Valley, that we'd fly empty to Calcutta in C-47s and 46s, the type of planes we had, pick up our freight there and fly then in a northeasterly direction up over the North Burma Hills to the, what we call a hump station, flying where the larger planes would fly the freight on into China over the hump. And so we called it flying around the horn. We'd fly empty to Calcutta, load up and over the North Burma Hills. And of course in North Burma at that time, the Japanese were fighting the British 14th Army in North Burma and eastern India. So we did have some alerts, and I never did see a Japanese fighter, but on one trip from Calcutta to Chadwa, well, I had to report in over each one of the ground stations, that, you know, just to make sure that they knew where we were and at what time. And I was sitting there with my monitoring receiver and said, alert, alert, tear easy, red alert. Meant that at the next checkpoint that we were supposed to cross over, they had Japanese fighters strafing. And so I got on the intercom and called the pilot, and I said, we got a red alert at Tara Easy. Boy, I no more got the words out, felt that thing banking around. Went back to Calcutta, boy. Get me out of here. That pilot didn't even wait for me to get it out of my mouth, boy. He started banking the minute I said red alert at Tara Easy.
Because y'all didn't have any guns?
No, just a little Douglas DC-3, you know, what used to be the airline plane before the war.
Mm-hmm.
And it made a light freight carrier out of it, you know. And but anyway, we had some funny instances happen. One buddy of mine was a radio operator on the plane. A lot of part of the war that they started putting this pipeline through from India and Burma to China.
Mm-hmm.
And so they need to fly a pipe in there, and they didn't know exactly, you know, exactly how much to haul. They had pretty good calculations, they felt like. But the first couple of flights, they overloaded. This one old boy, a buddy of mine, was a radio operator in there, and I got to see the takeoff. He'd come down the runway, and normally, you know, the tail would come up, you know, and then the whole thing would lift off like this. Well, he came down the runway. The front wheels come up and the tail was still on the ground. It was tail heavy, you know. And boy, he just did. That pilot was able to get it up over the trees. And boy, he banked around as quick as he could and came back and landed.
Yeah.
And this old boy, this radio operator, a friend of mine, his folks had sent him a new wristwatch that he had only had for 2 or 3 days. And boy, he went up to that pilot and took it off and said, I want you to have this watch because you just saved my life. But
y'all were like, how long did it take to make the run from your base up to the pump station?
Okay, it...
how long of a flight was it?
Well,
in hours? I mean,
in hours from our base to Calcutta was about an hour and 20 minutes, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then from Calcutta bases up to Chabwa, or the other hump stations, there was about four: Missamaria, Dinjan, Moranbarry, Sukratine, and Chabwa were the hump stations that we could carry stuff to. And that flight was the longest leg because it was sort of like a triangle.
Triangle,
like,
and then
like this. And it was, this was the long segment.
Okay, and so y'all would go up there and then fly on back to your
back
base?
Back to our base, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, but...
why did they have you based out there? I mean, what...
Well, they just... disbursement more than anything
else.
Yeah, so
yeah.
They didn't want to get them all grouped
yeah.
up together. And so I imagine that that was the reason that they had them spaced.
Yeah.
They had one, like we were right where the river turned and started up the valley, and then about 30 minutes flying time from us was Tezpur, and then about 30 minutes on up from it was, Tezpur, Jorhat. And then on beyond Jorhat was Sukratine, Missamaria, Dinjan, Chabwa. And, but... anyway, we lived in that Lyle Manor Hat, but we got there, let's see, we arrived at Lyle Manor Hat March 15th, I believe it was, 44,
mm-hmm.
and then around the 1st of April, I received a package in the mail, and I could tell from the return address it was Aunt Bonnie. And I thought, good gosh, and I checked the date stamp on that package. It was December the 6th, 1943. And here it was, 1st of April, 1944. She had sent me a big box of peanut butter cookies, homemade peanut butter cookies. And and they started following me. See, they followed me to, she mailed it when I was still at Hunter Field, Savannah, Georgia. And it followed me then to Camp Patrick Henry, Virginia, to Newport News, to Oran, North Africa, to Bombay, India, to Karachi, India, to Lyle Manor Hat. And it finally caught up with me the 1st of April, and I opened up that box and it was just powder. There was no form of a cookie at all, just a big box of powder.
Was the powder pretty good?
Powder smelled good. Yeah, but of course by that time it was getting pretty stale.
Stale, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
So I couldn't eat it.
Well, so y'all were there and your base was there, and
mm-hmm.
So would y'all make like one flight every day or so? Or?
Yeah, I usually, while I was on flying status, from time I got there in March until about 15th of January, 45.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had enough time in that I didn't, well, you know, I said, they'd give you the choice, if you want to keep flying or you want to quit.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, I've had enough.
Yeah.
So I the rest of the time that I spent there until I left in early part of November of 45 was in radio maintenance, you know,
mm-hmm.
checking radio trouble on planes that came in, and we'd meet a plane, you know, to see if they had any problems or anything. And our planes were having maintenance inspections on while we would pre-flight the equipment, you know, call the ground station, turn radios on, and check them to make sure.
Oh, that's your hand rubbing down here.
Anyway, it was quite an experience. I met a lot of good guys and made a lot of good friends. Some of them I've seen, you know,
mm-hmm.
since this reunion deal
yeah.
started.
Mm-hmm.
And but anyway, if you want to get the rest of my story, we left, they shipped us to depot, they called it, just outside of Calcutta for about 10 days in November. And then around the 1st of December, they shipped us on over to Karachi again, and to the same place where we had been when we first mm-hmm. got off the train. And spent the month of December waiting on a ship availability to take us home. And of course, on January the 6th, I believe it was, 1946, why they said the General A.W. Greeley is ready to go. Sitting at dockside, we'll load on the trucks in the morning and be ready to go. Boy, that was a happy day.
Let me back up for a minute and ask you now, when where were you and all that when you heard that the Japanese had surrendered and all that?
Okay, I was at Lau Manahat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah.
Did y'all celebrate or
anything? Oh, yeah, I've got some pictures in there that we had. Of course, we didn't have any ice for our beer, but we had a beer ration. And, boy, we put it away as much as we had. Oh, we were really celebrating.
Well, did they have any, Japanese that were still holed up out in there?
No, they had cleaned those out in the closest the Japanese got to our base as far as physically, mm-hmm. Movement was about 250 miles. So we, like I say, we had it soft compared to a lot of guys. We didn't have to fight on the ground, and we didn't have to, our particular crews didn't have to have any problem in the air, except just early part of the time, that alert there that I got that mm-hmm. time, said the Japanese fighters were, you wondered, when you was going to get that. It was mm-hmm. just the mystery of wondering when it was going to happen,
mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
of course, then it wasn't too long. The latter part of August and the middle of September, why, they had pretty well taken care of the 10th Air Force, had pretty well taken care of the Japanese Air Force
yeah.
in Burma and India there.
And they didn't really have any ground installations where they could fire at you or anything?
No, right?
Yeah.